Are you searching for the best in online black radio? Then go to blacktalkradionetwork.com, helping you filter through the noise. Real talk, black talk.
Context of white supremacy. Justice Gus T. Renegade, in for another broadcast, hopefully to share constructive information on the system of racism, white supremacy. Today's date, Sunday, June 1st, 2014. So I have been told. There have been just a bevy of incidents, all directly relating to racism, white supremacy, over the past, I would say, 6 months or so, that have got people directly focused on talking about the problem, the largest, single most important problem in the known universe. Certainly the issue with Donald Sterling, affirmative action, the Supreme Court ruling, where they continue to gut and take apart programs that were meant, even in meager forms, to work against racism, white supremacy. Mr. Ta-Nehisi Coates' article that has been widely discussed and talked about with regards to reparations, even in the world of sports. Saul Campbell, for our listeners over in the UK, making the comments that his career would have been better if he were a white person. And many white people coming out to complain and fuss at him and say that he's making it up and how could he make such a statement. Certainly even right here in my neck of the woods with Richard Sherman, starting the year off where he was labeled a thug, and him coming out and saying that he thought that that was racism, that that was just new code, new way of being able to call a black person a nigger. That's just skimming the surface with some of the things that have been talked about just in the last 6 months or so that, in my opinion, have focused attention on, and rightfully so, the system of racism, white supremacy. Always a pleasure to have our guest on for today's broadcast to try to make sense, connect the dots, as she is fond of saying, so that we get a better, accurate understanding of why these things are happening and what we can do as black people on our side of the chessboard to make the healthiest, most constructive behavioral decisions to help solve this problem, produce a higher quality of life for black people worldwide. Our guest, this is her 22nd time visiting the program. She is the author of the ISIS Papers, legendary text that I know tons of people have commented on and said it really helped their life, even if they didn't understand the first time. They had to read it a few times or read it, put it down and think about it for a while, that it really helped their understanding of the world in which we lived and helped them make very constructive changes in their life, what they think about black people, what they think about themselves. And as she is fond of saying, self-respect being a weapon of mass destruction. Hopefully people listening to this program will increase their self-respect, make some quantum leaps in how they think about and regard themselves, how they think about treat other black people. And that right there does a lot to work against the system of racism, white supremacy. She is a third generation physician, general and child psychiatrist. Always a pleasure having her on the program. I know I speak for all the folks who have tuned in over the years and listened to the cows, that they always are just super grateful when she can share some of her time to come through and speak with us. Joining us live from D.C., Dr. Frances Cress Welsing. Dr. Welsing, are you with us?
Yes, I am. Glad to be with you. Mm-hmm. Let me just say, I say self-respect is more powerful than a nuclear weapon. Not a weapon of mass destruction. It's more powerful than a nuclear weapon.
Thank you for the clarification. Thank you for the clarification. Okay. Yep, appreciate it. Before we get started, the weather, are you doing all right this evening, for you this evening?
I'm sorry?
I said before we get started, are you doing okay? How was the weather out in your area of D.C.?
Oh, it's a beautiful day here in Washington, D.C. The sun is bright, and it must be between 75 and 80 degrees, so it's beautiful. We don't have any rain, so we're enjoying glorious weather.
Wow. For once, I can say the same out here in the Pacific Northwest. A wonderful day. It's the same thing that I said yesterday. Hopefully sometime soon, we will not have to spend these types of glorious days talking about racism. We will have solved this problem. We can move on to other things and take advantage and get out and have a great time in the sunshine.
Well, you know, this is the problem of our time. Each epoch and each era has its problem or problems to work on, and the reality is that racism, white supremacy is the reality of our time, and the sun will shine if we can come to terms with that reality, because if we can face that reality, then we can use our creativity and our genius to solve a problem. So let's not wish it away. Let's just decide that we are going to, out of our self-respect, deal with the reality that confronts us.
Ashe, ashe. With regards to addressing that reality, honestly, I think someone who I think people have been talking about over the last week or so who did address that reality and wrote, talked about racism for most of her life. Dr. Maya Angelou, before we get started, did you have any thoughts or observations her transition just a few days ago?
Yes, someone asked me to, a reporter asked me to comment, and my thought was that she was an African queen, within the framework of the enslaved African people. Those are the people in the Americas, and she was a wise, wise woman. I had one occasion to sit in on an interview. She was being interviewed by a television reporter years ago, and she was a person that you would want to sit at her feet and learn, you know, how if you're children and you have an older person, a grandparent, and you can sit and listen to them talk and be impressed by their wisdom. That's the way that, not that she was that much older than myself, but she was so wise and so aware at so many levels. And, you know, we're just fortunate that she passed and left her genius amongst us for us to savor and learn from.
Well said. Just really in terms of dealing with the reality that we face and the magnitude of the problem of racism, did you see the reports? This came out within the last couple days that during the 911 call that was made to get assistance to her residence when she actually did transition, that the 911 dispatcher, white male, that call was recorded, and you could hear in the background he was talking to one of the other 911 dispatchers, also a white male, that they were talking, and when they found out that it was Dr. Angelou, and they said, oh, her pal is Oprah Winfrey. Her pal Oprah, all she does is sit around and talk about racism and how, you know, we're in this era with President Obama, and you got all these white people who were brought up in an era of hating black people. So she just talks about how racism is still this big problem. I'm paraphrasing, but this was all recorded, and they just posted the audio.
Oh, my goodness.
they just posted the audio of this online, and the 911 dispatcher, his name is John Ruck. It's R-U-C-K-H. I hope I'm saying it correctly. John Ruck. But he has been not fired, but he has been suspended. But this was released a few days after she passed away. But I think Mr. Fuller is fond of saying tacky, trifling, terroristic, that's about what you can expect.
Why was he fired or put on leave? And, you know, in other words, what she did talk about racism. I mean, did he call her a name, or what was the rationale there?
They felt, I guess it was embarrassing, number one, with someone with the magnitude of Dr. Angelo. And then you've got these people that are sitting around. To me, it sounded like griping about that she had the nerve to have this friend, Oprah Winfrey, who, you know, would be talking about racism as a problem. But a lot of people were upset about it, rightfully so, and felt that it was very disrespectful and that these people are taking 911 calls, they shouldn't be voicing their political opinions regardless of what they think. They should just be taking the call and trying to help people as opposed to voicing some sort of displeasure that they don't like the political affiliations of the people that are calling in or whatever public remarks that they've made. They should just be trying to do their job in the most professional manner. And people felt, from what I saw, a lot of people just felt that it was very unprofessional and that someone taking a call as serious as a 911 call, that they should not be making those sort of comments, particularly given that these calls tend to be recorded.
Well, you know, perhaps I'm looking at it in the same vein that I have looked at Donald Sterling. I'm very happy about the Donald Sterling interview. And what's her name? V. Scibiano?
Yes, ma'am.
Who interviewed him. In other words, the interview brought out the reality of the presence of racism, white supremacy, in all of its depth. And so I think that, you know, maybe they were embarrassed that these white people who took the 911 call, they were embarrassed that the racism came out. It's just like some of the things that Donald Sterling said when he talked about having gone to Israel, and that in Israel, the Israelis treated black people like dogs, and that was left out. Do you see that reality of what it is that he had to say? Now, not that this is wonderful, but we need to be in touch with the reality of racism, white supremacy. This is the dominant reality all over the world, and it most assuredly is the dominant reality in this area of the world that we call America. And I think that, you know, leading up to the discussion of Elliot Rogers, all of this racism that is manifest in his manifesto, that has been left out of the news. Do you see, that's the dominant thing about his situation, was living in an environment of racism, white supremacy, and how he, as a non-white person, mixed race, though he may have been, he is an Asian person, I mean a person who appears to be not white, some kind of not white. And so the reality of what he confronted and perhaps why he did what he did is left completely out of the news. Out of, I would have to say, embarrassment. We've just gone through several weeks of Donald Sterling's racism being revealed. And I think the media, you know, they must have decided across the board, look, we're not going to talk about this. We'll talk about misogyny. We'll talk about mental health. But we won't talk about the reality of what this individual had experienced.
I know with the Elliot Roger tragedy, for folks who haven't been paying attention, this was the incident, the mass killing in Southern California took place last Friday evening, where Elliot Roger, he went out, he killed his two roommates. They were both non-white.
Three roommates, weren't they?
Well, two of them actually lived with him, and the other male didn't live with him, but he was there.
I see. Mm-hmm.
But he killed three Asian males first, and then he went out and killed three other individuals, two female, one male. The two females, I think, are definitely classified as white. The male, I've seen several reports, and I think Dr. Welsing also thought that the other male might be a non-white male. His name was Chris Michaels Martinez, and they have photographs of all of the victims. And then Elliot Rogers went on to, they reported, commit suicide once he had gotten into a shootout with enforcement officials. But this has been talked about widely. He published a manifesto. It's about 140 pages detailing his frustrations going through his childhood and growing up in Southern California and difficulties that he had in school and what have you. I want to read just a quick paragraph that I think gets right to the core of what you just said and something that I don't think has been shared in the media, the many different reports, whether it's in print or what they've had on television. I have not seen this paragraph read or dissected frequently at all. It's almost as though they omitted or act like it wasn't published. He writes, as my fourth grade year approached its end, my little 9-year-old self had another revelation about how the world works. I realized that there were hierarchies, that some people were better than others. Of course, I was subconsciously aware of this in the past, but it was at this time of my life, at 9 years old, that I started to give it a lot of thought and importance. I started to see this at school. At school, there were always the cool kids who seemed to me more admirable than everyone else. The way they looked, dressed, and acted made them cooler. These cool kids, as I called them, included Keaton Weber, Matt Boyder, Michael Ray, and others. They were cool, they were popular, and they always seemed like they were having a good time. The peaceful and innocent environment of childhood, where everyone had an equal footing, was all over. The time of fair play was at its end. Life is a competition and a struggle, and I was slowly starting to realize it. When I became aware of this common social structure at my school, I also started to examine myself and compare myself to these cool kids. I realized with some horror that I wasn't cool at all. I had a dorky hairstyle, and I wore plain and uncool clothing, and I was shy and unpopular. I was always described as the shy boy in the past, but I never really thought that my shyness would affect me in a negative way until this point. This revelation about the world and myself really decreased my self-esteem. On top of this was the feeling that I was different because I am of mixed race. I am half white, half Asian, and this made me different from the normal, fully white kids that I was trying to fit in with. I envied the cool kids, and I wanted to be one of them. I was a bit frustrated at my parents for not shaping me into one of these kids in the past. They never made an effort to dress me in stylish clothing or get me a good-looking haircut. I had to make every effort to rectify this. I had to adapt. My first act was to ask my parents to allow me to bleach my hair blonde. I always envied and admired blonde-haired people. They always seemed so much more beautiful. My parents agreed to let me do it, and my father took me to a hair salon on Mulholland Drive in Woodland Hills. Choosing that hair salon was a bad decision, for they only bleached the top of my head blonde. When I indignantly questioned why they didn't make all of my hair blonde, they said that I was too young for a full bleaching. I was furious. I thought I looked so silly with blonde hair at the top of my head and black hair at the sides and back. I dreaded going to school the next day with this weird new hair. When I arrived at school the next day, I was intensely nervous. Before class started, I stood in a corner, frantically trying to figure out how I would go about revealing this to everyone. Trevor was the first one to notice it, and he came up to me and patted my head, saying that it was very cool. Well, that was exactly what I wanted. My new hair turned out to be quite a spectacle, and for a few days, I got a hint of the attention and admiration I so craved. I will stop there. You, as a general child psychiatrist, does anything stand out as significant about this passage?
Well, do you see, I just cannot stress enough that here, you know, I translated the cool kids, the white kids. See, the people that he's calling cool, he really means the white kids. There he is. You know, maybe he was the only non-white in the class or in his group. And, of course, he wasn't accepted any more than any other non-white child would be fully accepted in a predominantly white setting in a system of racism, white supremacy. And so he's saying, and first of all, I think he's highly intelligent. And it's a tragedy that it worked out as it did, because he could be a novelist and he could be a playwright. Do you see, his manifesto is brilliant in terms of describing the experience of a non-white, the rejection, the desire for acceptance, the desire to be included. So that's what I'm hearing, and I think the tragedy is that psychiatry, the American Psychiatric Association, does not give prominence to the dynamic of racism, white supremacy in our society. And I'm saying that in a total system structure and dynamic of racism, white supremacy, wherein no one talks about racism, white supremacy, everyone appears to be insane, meaning out of touch with reality. Now, would that the parents, would that his parents, with his father being white and his biological mother was Asian, would that they had sat down and talked to him and explained to him about racism, white supremacy? Would that the school system that he attended talked about racism, white supremacy, so that you wouldn't have somebody struggling with it on their own and just feeling rejected? I mean, if they, you know, in a classroom, if they talk to children at an early age, we are in a system of racism, white supremacy. And this is tragic, and boys and girls, learn all that you can so you can help the society change and replace racism, white supremacy with justice. But we want all the boys and girls, regardless of their color, as to their skin color, to love and respect themselves. What if children were taught that? But certainly from what he has written, no one ever made him feel good about who he was as a person being described and being looked upon as non-white in a system of racism, white supremacy.
Absolutely. I think most of the times that you have visited on this program, you emphasized that you are the only psychiatrist with a record for the last 40 years of talking about racism. And I think before we started the program, you were saying that this Mr. Roger, he is reported to have been seeing, getting counseling of some sort, that his parents felt that he did need some sort of intervention, that you would be willing to bet a significant sum of money that they did not talk to him about racism, and that that should have been a core aspect of any sort of counseling or therapy that he was getting. Am I understanding you correctly?
Well, you know, as I said, it's a tragedy that I would be the only psychiatrist in the United States of America who has been talking about racism, white supremacy for the last 40-plus years. I'm the only psychiatrist in the world who has been talking about this and emphasizing this and saying that we have to come to terms with this reality. And it is being steadfastly avoided up to the present. You see, now I know the therapists who work with him because he started seeing a therapist at an early age. But I know they can't reveal patient, you know, because of confidentiality rules. But based on my experience with my colleagues in the field of psychiatry, this is not a prominent discussion. And I remember I had applied for a job as a child psychiatrist in a program a number of years ago, and the program was in a black community. All the patients and the families were black. All of the staff was white. And so I applied for a job as a child psychiatrist in this program in a community mental health center, and as I said, a black community. And the director of the program, a white psychiatrist, said to me, "You have an excellent reputation as a psychiatrist. However, you talk about racism, and our staff is white, and you make white people uncomfortable, so no, you cannot have the job." Now, I laughed. I said, "Now, you're telling me that I have an excellent reputation as a psychiatric physician. You are in a community that is all black. And you're telling me because when I talk about racism, I make a white staff uncomfortable, that I cannot be employed." Now, as it turned out, the director of mental health at that time, this was years ago in Washington, he was black, and he forced them to hire me. But this is the point. If you talk about the reality of racism, white supremacy, you have an excellent reputation, but no, you can't work because the white staff will be uncomfortable. And I dare say that that applies to all of the mental health clinics in the United States of America, because if it were not true, then you would have many more mental health workers, psychiatrists, psychologists, talking about the subject of racism, white supremacy. But just like in this case of Elliot Rogers, you see, the racism is suppressed on the part of the media. No, we're not going to discuss that. And I want to suggest to your audience, everybody should get the book. You know, Albert Einstein, the genius physicist, wrote on race and racism. There's a book, it's a little bit old, but it's called Einstein on Race and Racism. And I'll just, let me quote something that he said. This is a quotation from Albert Einstein, genius. "The separation of the races is not a disease of colored people. It is a disease of white people. I do not intend to be quiet about it," end quote, Albert Einstein. But the book is by Fred Jerome and Roger Taylor. So it might be a good idea if people in your audience decide to try to get a copy of this book and read what the genius Albert Einstein had to say about race and racism.
Got my copy earlier this week. Thank you kindly.
Okay.
I would recommend folks do the same. Wow, and that, just what you revealed about your own personal experience, that is, it's fascinating, but it's all too common, because we've had folks call into this very program on the other side of the spectrum as patients seeking counseling, where they've gone in, and just like Elliot Rodger, the core of the problem is racism, being mistreated because we're in a system of white supremacy, and, you know, people have been classified as not white. And they said when they attempted to bring it up with their therapist, who regularly is a white person, that it has caused problems, that the therapist has tried to move the conversation to something else. They do not want to address racism. And I've heard repeatedly from a lot of folks that trying to bring up racism in therapy counseling sessions it has not been constructive. Not even from one black male, he brought it up. He was a student and he was bringing up racism as an issue. The counselor refused to work with him and gave that as the reason that you continue to bring up racism in the sessions. That has nothing to do with the issues that we're working with. And I'm not going to be able to continue to offer any therapy or counseling to you. And it just, that seems very common in this system where people are not encouraged, not able to get help addressing reality, the problem of racism.
See, now just think about Elliot Rogers. Here he is as a little child in a predominantly white school system, I'm absolutely certain. And he is experiencing the mistreatment that people who classify themselves as white across the age spectrum, consciously and or subconsciously, subject non-white people to. So this is the incubator in which this tragic event took place. Do you see? Because there was no acknowledgement and no dealing with the reality. Now remember on CNN when Anderson Cooper did the study, it was a repeat of the Kenneth Clark study, Kenneth Clark being the black psychologist who had children look at a series of faces across the color spectrum, the same face but different color. And having, or Kenneth Clark did a dial study, you know, which dial is the pretty dial. And but Anderson Cooper had children looking at a series of faces, the same face but different colors, and was checking and looking at what ages are children in this society conscious of race and racism. And he had three-year-old white children at age three, and they're looking at the series of faces from white to black. And when the three-year-old white child is asked, which one is ugly, the child immediately points to black. Which one is bad, points to black. No hesitation. And when slightly older black children were interviewed and asked which face is the good face or the beautiful face, those children pointed to white, or which one is bad, they pointed to black. Which one is ugly, they pointed to black. Now this is, you know, these are not bad children. These children are just learning at very early ages what the society is all about, what the culture is all about, just like they learn the language. See, nobody stops and wonders how did the child learn English if you were in an English-speaking environment, or how did the child learn French, or how did the child learn Dutch. The child is absorbing the culture that is surrounding him or her. And so here is somebody who's half white and half Asian, and the half white doesn't show. The fact that they are non-white is what shows. And they are being treated accordingly. And his rage at the end came out in a tragic event that the society as a whole continues to refuse to talk about. So, I repeat, in a total system structure and dynamic of racism, white supremacy, wherein no one talks about racism, white supremacy, everyone appears to be insane, out of touch with reality. You see, when people are out of touch with reality, they cannot be considered as having mental health. And all of the discussion about mental health and how what the mental health needs are in the country as a whole. The greatest mental health need in this country, in this total system, is to be aware of the system structure is not democracy, but racism, white supremacy. And I say the system structure is about white genetic survival and to prevent white genetic annihilation. Now, LeVar, what I do think is interesting is both Donald Sterling and Elliot Rogers, both of them had envy of the black male. I don't know, maybe you want to read for your audience what he had to say about how he envied the black male who had was able to date the white female. These are teenagers. And the white female chose to date the black male as opposed to him, and he called himself better looking than the black male. Now, Donald Sterling, if we go back to his interview, where he was telling his girlfriend not to associate with black males, and then he said in the interview that he was jealous of the black male. I think that's also an interesting aspect of racism.
That reminds me of the ISIS papers a little bit, I think, but I will oblige. This is from Elliot Rodger, his manifesto. This is on page 84. And folks, if you're I would encourage, if you want some reading, get the manifesto. You can download it. The New York Times has it. It's 141 pages. I'll say the same thing that I said about Christopher Dorner. This has been attributed to him. Maybe he didn't write it. Who knows? But it has been attributed to him. And the enforcement officials in Southern California, they confirmed last week that this was authentic. They released a statement saying that he did write it, however they confirmed. But this is on page 84. Elliot Rodger, he wrote, he's talking about his first week going to college. My first week turned out to be very unpleasant, leaving a horrific first impression of my new life in Santa Barbara. My two housemates were nice, but they kept inviting over his friends. Excuse me. They kept inviting other over these friends of theirs named Chance. He was a black boy who came over all the time, and I hated his cocksure attitude. Inevitably, a vile incident occurred between me and him. I was eating a meal in the kitchen when he came over and started bragging to my housemates about his success with girls. I couldn't stand it, so I proceeded to ask them all if they were virgins. They all looked at me weirdly and said that they had lost their virginity long ago. I felt so inferior, as it reminded me of how much I have missed out in my life. And then this black boy named Chance said that he lost his virginity when he was only 13. In addition, he said that the girl he lost his virginity to was a blonde white girl. I was so enraged that I almost splashed him with my orange juice. I indignantly told him that I did not believe him, and then I went to my room to cry. I cried and cried and cried, and then called my mother and cried to her on the phone. How could an inferior, ugly black boy be able to get a white girl and not me? I am beautiful, and I am half white myself. I am descended from British aristocracy. He is descended from slaves. I deserve it more. I tried not to believe his foul words, but they were already said, and it was hard to erase from my mind. If this is actually true, if this ugly black filth was able to have sex with a blonde white girl at the age of 13, while I've had to suffer virginity all my life, then this just proves how ridiculous the female gender is. They would give themselves to this filthy scum, but they reject me. The injustice. I will stop there. Any thoughts, Dr. Welsen?
Well, do you see, I actually, if this was a society that wanted to become healthy, they would give the same prominence to this diary or this this discourse, Anne Frank, the Jewish girl who was killed by the Nazis in the Second World War. Do you see? In other words, just like she was writing about racism in Europe, because Hitler killed the Semites of the Jewish religion because he said they were not white. Now, they may look white to black people, but Hitler and other Europeans said they were not white, and therefore they were going to kill them. And so that was racism, white supremacy on the continent of Europe. And this manifesto, this diary written by this young man, is a statement about the racism, white supremacy, and if the society wanted to become healthy, it would study this document. Just like reading the diary of Anne Frank, then people can learn about Europe's racism, white supremacy towards the Semites of the Jewish religion. And so I think it's a very interesting statement, and also about the hierarchy. Do you see all the people of color that have been under white supremacy line up? If you're black, get back. Brown, stick around. Yellow, mellow. White, right. And so the closer you are to white, the more you feel that you are over and more important or better looking than black. And so you have, and this is the white supremacy dynamic, understands this and produces this color hierarchy so that the people will squabble with each other about who's closest to white. Just like you have a huge segment of the Hispanic population. They could be brown or light brown, but they will classify themselves as white. See, everybody wants to be white, meaning everybody is demeaning and degrading themselves because they are not white under white supremacy, because everybody wants to be treated well and everybody wants to be accepted. And so the closer you are to white, the more you think you should be accepted. But this is color sickness. This is color sickness in a society that is sick with racism, white supremacy, or shall I say has the, and I don't really call racism, white supremacy a sickness as much as it is a system structure that was structured for white genetic survival, but it needs to be put on top of the table, as opposed to, you know, every week, the elephant under the rug, the big white elephant under the rug, stirs. And so you have another outcropping of evidence that we are in a system of racism, white supremacy. And then everybody scrambles to put the rug back over the big white elephant to keep it silent. But if it was a wise and healthy society, this document would be studied, just like the Donald Sterling interviews. They would be studied. This is evidence of thinking, disturbed thinking in a system of racism, white supremacy. And it should be studied and mastered if we are going to end up being able to replace the system of racism, white supremacy with a system of justice. And justice being no one is mistreated, no one is allowed to be mistreated, and those who need the most help get the most help.
What would your response be? Because there are a lot of black people, non-white people, who they saw photographs or video of Elliot Rodger, and they said, "Oh, I think this is a white person. I think this is somebody who had quote unquote white privilege. He lived a very opulent existence. He had a BMW and writes about going to all of these very rich and fancy places and going to Hollywood premieres. His dad is a big time movie maker. I think this guy was white, and he clearly has no problem expressing his disdain for black people and even other non-white people. He killed three Asian people. He makes a lot of comments as well about how he doesn't like Asian people, both in his manifesto and online. Other non-white people, this guy, he wanted to be white. He is thinking in the same way as racist man, racist woman. I think that this guy was just white, and then he went, and particularly him going out and killing three Asian people. What would your response be?
Well, I would say that he despised himself not being white, and therefore he despised his roommates who were also Asian and non-white. I mean, it's no different than black people shooting and killing one another because they have been taught and treated being oppressed under white supremacy and being demeaned and degraded in a system of white supremacy. So they are consciously, subconsciously taught black self-hatred, and they go out and harm and kill other black people. So the people of color, the people who are non-white under white supremacy, this is a tragic, oppressive system. And the reason I talk about it, so we can all, instead of pretending that it doesn't exist, we can all look at it, talk about it, understand it, and change it. As long as we don't talk about it, then we don't see how we are impacted by it. And the kinds of things that occurred in the case of Elliot Rogers and all of the black-on-black homicide and violence and killing, this is a reflection of non-white people hating themselves. And they are taught these lessons in the dynamic system of racism, white supremacy. So I'm not at all surprised. Again, understanding racism, white supremacy, that this kind of Asian self-hatred, black self-hatred, non-white people disliking themselves. Probably if you tested people who call themselves Hispanic, if they could all change and become really white tomorrow, would they do it? I would dare say yes.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That reminds me of George Schuyler's book, Black No More. This book was published almost 100 years ago. It's a black author, but he wrote, it's the experiment that you talk about all the time, that you'd be a billionaire overnight if you could get those three pills so that black people could become white, have white hair, white features, the whole nine. His book is about this happening. It's fiction, of course, but he writes exactly what you said. You'd become a billionaire overnight. You'd have a mad rush of black people looking to change themselves as a result of how we've been contaminated by the system of racism, white supremacy.
See, but it's not just black people.
Absolutely.
It's all of the non-white people. All over the subcontinent of India, people want to bleach their skin and change their color. All over Asia, people want to bleach their skin and change their color and become blonde. Mm-hmm. Do you see, just like all over Africa, all the people of color have been contaminated by this psychological virus. And so we have to talk about it and say this is a tragedy. This is not self-respect, and it needs to be changed. And we need to recognize where it comes from. See, I say that fewer than one-tenth of the people on the planet have white skin. They are the minority population on the planet, and they are in fear as a minority and being genetic recessive in terms of skin coloration. They are fearful of their genetic annihilation on the planet. But the more they can program the non-white people to hate themselves, then the non-white people end up wanting to be white and supporting the one-tenth white minority and making, dynamically speaking, causing the one-tenth minority to appear more powerful, because as non-white people they hate themselves and they're willing to engage in behavior that is self and group destructive. And so it makes the tiny white minority become very powerful because they have programmed the global non-white majority, nine-tenths world majority, to dislike themselves. So they are not functioning in self-respect. They're not functioning cooperatively with one another. On the other hand, they are willing to hurt and injure and kill one another. So if we talk about it, hopefully it'll come on top of the table and it will begin to change.
Absolutely. Since this has not been reported in a lot of the mainstream discussions, dialogues on what happened with Elliot Rodger, what has been reported is this is a hate crime against women. This guy was a sexist. He was a misogynist. I think the hashtag that got very popular was Yes, All Women. As a female, did you think, you know, yes, this guy did express a lot of sexist views. He did kill two females. Did you have any thoughts on this being reported as a hate crime against women?
Well, you see, I saw white females trying to turn it into a predominantly anger against women. But that's a distortion because he was angry against white females because he felt they rejected him. Out of their racism, white supremacy mindset. See, now that's what they don't want to deal with. His attitudes didn't develop in a vacuum. His attitudes developed in the framework of racism, white supremacy. See, that's like, think about all of the black males who have been accused of rape. Think of the black males who were accused of rape and were lynched and castrated by white, the accusations made by white females. Now, they didn't make an accusation of rape against Elliot, but he was not their choice of a date. He was not their choice of being a boyfriend. And so he said in one interview that I read that he wanted to be loved. He wanted to be admired. And he said, what's wrong with that? He might have said, isn't that the human thing to want to be admired and loved and respected? So there's a lot to learn. This is certainly in no way justifying his actions. But I look at his actions not as war against females in the abstract. And didn't he have a black babysitter at one point?
Yes, ma'am. He had a black nanny. Her
name. He had a black nanny at one point, and he said she was fun, you know, and they enjoyed her taking care of them.
Yes, ma'am. For 2 years, it's in his manifesto. He details that, and it reminded me of The Help. He had nothing but positive things to say about his contact and interaction with her, and that she ended up having a dispute with his white father, and that's when it all fell apart and she no longer worked for them. But she lived in the house with him, with his dad, took care of he and his younger sister. And he even has an incident where she took him out. There were some other white children playing in the neighborhood. And Tracy, his black nanny, she took him out and asked the other white children if they would play with him. And they did. He said it was so great because he was so shy and he wouldn't have had the courage to go and do it by himself. So yeah, he did not express any problems with black females or Asian females. He focuses exclusively on white women as being the source of his problems and rejection.
Well, again, we've heard, you know, we've heard one tenth of the story in the media, and there's a huge segment of this story that is not being told. And I would say much to the shame of the media that refuses to deal with the most important aspect of this story. The aspect, if it is discussed, that the entire society can learn from. And you see, the denial of racism is essential to its maintenance. In other words, the pretense that this is really not there. And we don't need to look at it. We don't need to talk about it. And again, I would say it's like the media cover-up with Donald Sterling. He said, in his own words, that in the state of Israel, black people are treated worse than dogs. And the media hushed that up. The American people give billions of dollars in tax money to the state of Israel. Black people give their tax money to support the state of Israel, but black people are mistreated there. Should this not be talked about? If not, why not?
Excellent point. Excellent point. A listener, they wrote in a question about Elliot Rodger. Their question was, how does Rodger's diagnosis of autism fit into all this? Do you think he was really autistic, or do you think he was having a reaction to racism?
I think he was having a reaction to racism. I would, do you see, in other words, one could, in other words, I haven't examined him and won't have an opportunity to examine him, but based on what we see in his manifesto, he's talking about the pain and anguish being non-white in a system of racism, white supremacy. And this is what my practice is all about. The number of people that come in, black people coming in to talk to a black psychiatrist about their mistreatment on the job. And the number of people that I've told that they have post and continuous traumatic stress because of the racial abuse. The racial abuse that many black people experience on jobs is absolutely horrendous. It's as though they are still on the plantation, the way that they are abused, and no place to turn because of the denial of racism on the part of people who classify themselves as white. And I would say the vast majority of white people deny the existence of racism as a powerful dynamic. You see, so that the abuse of people, I mean, people come in my office, males and females, practically in tears because of what they have to endure in the workplace. And yet the American Psychiatric Association wants to minimize the reality of racism. And I say that's why we have an Elliot Rodger. Or is what's the other gentleman's name who was fired from the police force?
Christopher Dorner. Absolutely. I was going to ask about Donald Sterling, but that workplace race, we talk about that all the time. We have people call in every Saturday. We spend an hour just talking about incidents, observations, problems that people are dealing with. What are some of the suggestions that you give out when people come in and they have incidents about how they're being mistreated on the job and dealing with racism on the job? Like, what are some of the suggestions that you routinely give out for black people dealing with that or non-white people?
Well, first of all, I try to help people understand what racism is all about. Now, that doesn't make it any easier because racism, white supremacy, is like a form of warfare being conducted against black people in general and black male persons in particular. And so I tell people they have to understand it as war. They have to develop tactics and strategies like in job situations. Document the things that are said to you. You see, the whole pattern of people being denied promotions, the whole pattern of people trying to be downgraded after having outstanding evaluations. And then a new supervisor comes on with the goal, with the assignment to get rid of the black person and downgrading the person's performance. Now, this is warfare against people. And by helping them understand racism as a system, and therefore putting this pattern of warfare in the workplace, putting it in perspective, but it doesn't solve the problem of the trauma. And a lot of people can't afford to get lawyers. Some people can't afford to get lawyers. And even when they get lawyers, it's an uphill battle to try to prove what is indeed happening to them in the workplace. But this is why, you know, if we say it, if we talk about a black agenda, I say that black people must have the agenda. I would put emphasis on insisting upon that it be admitted that we indeed are in a system structure of racism, white supremacy. Do you see? In other words, if the black collective in this part of the world, if we insisted that racism, white supremacy as a system structure is the reality that black people face, and not calling it Jim Crow or not calling it segregation, say a total system structure of racism, white supremacy, and we insist upon it and we insist that it be recognized in much the same way that Semites of the Jewish religion insist that there be recognition of the Holocaust that they experienced. Do you see? I mean, it's against the law in some places to deny that the Holocaust occurred. Well, black people need to be insisting upon the recognition that we are indeed in a system structure of racism, white supremacy, so that every individual black person doesn't have to try to do it by themselves in the situation that they find themselves in. And fortunately, the Attorney General, Eric Holder, made his second most important statement. Now, the first statement, in my opinion, was when he said, "Are we a nation of cowards being unable to talk about racism?" His recent statement, following the Donald Sterling event, was to say that it's more than just the abusive words of a Donald Sterling, that the racism is systemic. And I think that that is the position that all black people need to take. See, we've got a lot of black people, or people who probably call in, some people who call in your show, and say, why do we have to keep talking about racism? Is that right?
All the time.
You see, it's like, that's like saying, why do we have to keep talking about reality? And I'm here to say that more important than asking for reparations should be black people insisting upon the acknowledgement that we are in a total system structure of racism, white supremacy that impacts economics, education, entertainment, labor, law, politics, religion, sex, and war, whether consciously and or subconsciously determined, which influences patterns of perception, logic, symbol formation, thought, speech, action, and emotional response for the ultimate purpose of white genetic survival and the prevention of white genetic survival on planet Earth, the planet upon which the vast and overwhelming majority of people are black, brown, red, and yellow, and they are called non-white by the minority people who classify themselves as white. So, you know, these events that keep coming up, instead of just reacting, dealing with it one at a time and being shocked each time we have another event that surfaces that is brought to our attention. We need to function from the position of an analysis that clarifies we are in a total system structure of racism, white supremacy, and that is why we are seeing the kinds of behaviors from individuals, be it Donald Sterling or be it George Zimmerman or any of the other cases that come to our attention. There is a reason that these cases exist. And I want to also talk about, in this case, they talked about mental health, but also gun control. And we have to begin to understand, I say you can't understand the gun mania if you don't understand racism, white supremacy. The gun is the answer to conscious and or subconscious, the answer, the response to the quite collective feeling they can be genetically annihilated by black genetic material. And the gun is a great equalizer. I encourage everybody to get a copy of the ISIS papers and read. And this is why when the black man became president of the United States, you had the Obama effect. And this is white people going out massively and buying guns. And this is why you can't have gun control. The gun is essential in the mindset of racism, white supremacy. It is essential for white survival. Now, until we come to terms with that, we'll be, you know, wondering, well, how come we can't have gun control? The young man Martinez, who was killed by Elliot Rogers, the father was crying, yelling and crying in the media. Is that right?
Yes, ma'am.
About guns. Why can't there be gun control? Well, unless you understand the system of racism, white supremacy, and the importance of the gun for white genetic survival, unless we begin to understand comprehensively where the gun fits in, then we can have a meaningful discussion about gun control, even if it's no more than the acknowledgement. The people who have the power consider that the gun, not just First Amendment, the gun is essential for white genetic survival. That's why it's called the great equalizer. And that's why the expression son of a gun, white males use the expression son of a gun, meaning their genitals. A gun is the equivalency of their genitals. Because their genitals cannot annihilate black. Black male genitals can cause white genetic annihilation. That's why black men would be lynched and castrated. But the gun is the symbolic representation. And so we all need to decide to get a PhD in understanding racism, white supremacy, but you don't have to go to a university. You just have to begin to think and read. Starting with the ISIS papers.
Keys to the colors, amen. It's ubiquitous in the language, cocksure. I think that did pop up in the manifesto.
What popped up?
The term cocksure, how you were talking son of a gun, is ubiquitous in the language. Type of phrasings and what have you. Mm-hmm. I definitely wanted to ask. I know with Donald Sterling, it seems like it's a new update every day. Just within the past 3-4 days or so, they said it was reported that he has been declared mentally unfit and he is suffering from Alzheimer's disease. That was just in the last 3-4 days or so. Given all of the interviews, the audio recording that was released, and then the interview that he did with Anderson Cooper, where he was kind of all over the place in his comments on Magic Johnson and what have you, and how black people don't look out for one another. What are your thoughts, going back to mental health again, what are your thoughts on him now being declared mentally unfit?
Well, I don't know. I mean, is that supposed to be an official medical diagnosis, or this is just somebody saying this is what they think so that, you know, his comments can be minimized and they can be dismissed?
This is supposed to be a medical diagnosis that they just released, where his wife is supposed to be in charge and running the trust, the Donald Sterling trust. His wife is supposed to be in charge. This is supposed to be a professional medical diagnosis. Alzheimer's disease, mentally unfit.
Well, in other words, until he had that interview, he was considered to be a smart owner of the the Clippers?
Yes, ma'am.
Do you see, he was considered to be a smart lawyer, and so I would just say that that sounds like some legal maneuvering, as opposed to, I mean, it's like saying that Rogers was mentally ill, and focusing and putting emphasis. In other words, what he did was a great tragedy. You see, but we have soldiers going out all the time in different countries and shooting down tens of people because they are called the enemy. Is that right?
Absolutely.
See, this is something that we have to think about. We are in, I say that there can't be racism, white supremacy without mass murder. Killing, like the majority of people that are being killed on the planet are non-white people. And they're all being killed by weapons manufactured by people who classify themselves as white. In a global system of racism, white supremacy. See, where the gun is considered, you've got a problem, then get the gun. You've got a problem, too many people of color, get the gun and start killing tens of thousands. Set up situations where you are justified in killing, which is, you know, parallel to stand your ground. If you're afraid, you're justified in killing a black person. You thought they had a weapon. They didn't have a weapon, but you thought they had a weapon. So you're justified in killing them. This is what the entire culture has to look comprehensively at itself. And what are the real deep lessons that are being taught within this cultural framework?
Absolutely, absolutely. With regards to the Sterling case, I guess another thing, quite a few people asked, I don't know if you saw the when he was on Anderson Cooper, Donald Sterling, I guess it was about two or three weeks ago, and he started off kind of apologizing and saying that he was sorry for what he had been through, and he had an anecdote that I think he might have fabricated it, but, you know, I don't know. I can't prove that. That's just speculation. But he said that his grandchildren went to school and the other children wouldn't give them any snack treats and said that they don't have snack treats for racists, and he was so shook
up. No, wait a minute. They didn't have what?
This was his granddaughter, he said, was at school. And they were passing out, like, little snacks for the children, and they didn't give her one. And she said, hey, wait a minute, I didn't get one. And they said, we don't have snack treats for racists.
You mean this is after the grandfather had appeared on television?
Right, right.
I see. No, I hadn't heard that.
But he proceeded when this was at the beginning, right, where he's sounding like he's going to apologize and very conciliatory and just, I feel so bad about all this, and I'm not a racist. And then he proceeds to just go in and talk really bad about Magic Johnson, and he doesn't do anything to help out black people, and he just ran around and had sex with all of these women with AIDS, and he just ran around, and who's he to look up to? And I don't know why people think he's so great and so holier than thou, and he just really talked bad about him. And then it extended to black people in general, and just saying that black people don't help out other black people financially. And a lot of people asked, they said, well, you know, why? After he was under so much scrutiny and people saying this guy's a racist and we need to get rid of him, why would he come out and go on attack against Magic Johnson? Do you have any thoughts on what would motivate that sort of behavior?
Well, I just think, the lawyer Mark Geragos, when people were exclaiming, oh, how could he say such a thing, Mark Geragos said on CNN, I hear people talking like this every day, all the time, every day. See, what about all the things that are said, the hostile, negative things that are said about President Obama every day? How the Congress treats President Obama every day? You see, where the overwhelming aspect of what they're saying is we don't respect this black man. We don't respect him because he's black. We're going to try to see that he fails because he's black. So this is the tone. It's like the people in the media. Oh, he's racist, but turn on any media program, and what are you going to see? A whole table full of white people talking about the world's problems. White. And then they'll point and say Donald Sterling is a racist, but we're not. Come on.
Great point. I want to get some of the folks who dialed in, but I think also this week, just like every day, it seems like it's something new. Did you see the cover of Time magazine for this week?
No.
Okay. Laverne Cox was on the front cover. Laverne Cox is a transgender black female. She is a prominent actor. Well, she's a prominent participant in the popular series Orange is the New Black, where it's a white female. She's in prison and it's got a lot of lesbian activity, homosexual activity. But the cover for the Time magazine, it says The Tipping Point, and it says that transgender is the new frontier of civil rights. This is the cover for Time magazine, and she's a black person, Laverne Cox. And I thought, wow, that is striking, particularly given all of the conversation that's been about racism over the past few months or what have you. Do you have any thoughts on that in terms of having this black person, Laverne Cox, literally be the face for what they're saying? This is the new frontier of civil rights, transgender issues.
Well, see, what I think is fascinating is how black people are becoming the face. Like the football player who announced that he was gay and he's kissing his white mate.
Michael Sam.
I'm sorry?
Michael Sam. That's his name, Michael Sam, the football player.
Oh, Michael, yes, okay. Do you see that the whole sexual thing that is being pushed at black people? Now, this is not to say anything against a person who may say they're gay, but why is gay behavior being pushed at black people? See, disturbance in sexuality being pushed at black people. And I maintain that it also consciously, subconsciously has to do with the genocide of black people. See, if black people, disturbance in gender functioning is promoted. See, in other words, it's just not existing. It's being promoted. You see, saying to African countries, if you don't accept homosexual gay marriage, then you won't get aid. Why push this? Why push this? You're not pushing education. You're not pushing housing. You're not pushing roads and schools, hospitals, health care. Why push behavior that is non-procreative at black people? See, in other words, if this is Western preference, Western cultural preference, fine. But this doesn't have to be everybody's cultural preference. Just like racism, white supremacy is Western cultural preference. People of color, black people, don't have to endorse that. So why is that being pushed for black people? Why is it important for black male movie stars to put on a dress? Why is that being pushed by people who classify themselves as white? Do you see? But it would fit in with an understanding of the logic of racism, white supremacy. If men become women, if men become feminized, then that would help white genetic survival. If black men become women, then white females won't have as their ideal mate tall, dark, and handsome. See, there are many ways that the equations can be turned around and looked at. If you understand what is the premise that is denied. See, all of this activity is being done in the presence of the denial of racism, white supremacy. And I say racism, white supremacy is behavior designed for white genetic survival. Well, white genetic survival doesn't feel that it can survive in the presence of dominant genetic material, which is black. See, that's why it was easy to cut off black males' genitalia at one point in the history, not too distant history. See, black men never cut off white men's genitals. But what is in the mindset of people who classify themselves as white that make it necessary to cut off black males' genitals? So you cut off their genitals at one point, and then you want to insist that they put on dresses at another point in time. And push black people to put male-male relations, female-female relations on the same par with male-female. Well, male-female is the only behavior that guarantees procreation or guarantees generations into the future. But if you don't want some people to have generations into the future, then you can propose and endorse and emphasize a lot of behavior that will make that impossible. See, what's missing is the ability of people who classify themselves as white to look in the mirror and take white responsibility. Take responsibility for their behavior, and their behavior is never under the microscope. And this is why racism, white supremacy cannot be discussed. It's putting white collective behavior under the microscope. And this is what needs to happen.
I guess make sure I get in. I think for a lot of black people, this issue can be challenging, because if you make comments or paraphrase or say something similar to what you just said, it's very easy to be branded homophobic, saying, oh my gosh, you are against gay people and, you know, you're a bigot or something like that. Do you have a codified response if someone says, oh my goodness, Dr. Welsing, what
you
just said?
No, just the people who have, you know, come to my practice and who are gay, they can speak for whether I'm homophobic or not. See, I'm not homophobic, but I am a psychiatrist and a behavioral scientist that seeks to understand how certain patterns of behavior develop and what is the meaning of certain patterns of behavior. See, what can I be called if I'm examining white behavior? Am I a blancophobe?
My suspicion, or at least from what I've seen, pseudoscientific BS, that's been one, black supremacist.
Yeah, that was Tim Wise, Dr. Welsing's. Pseudoscientific BS.
Right on.
And I said, well, since he said he wasn't racist, that would be anticipated.
Wow. I will see if we can nab a few of the folks who dialed in who have questions. If you have a question for Dr. Welsing, the number again is 760-569-7676, and the code is 564-943-pound. Press *6 if you have a question. The number again is 760-569-7676, code 564-943-pound. Press *6 if you have a question. I just want to make sure, because I try to tell folks when I can, because we do have listeners that are in the D.C. area. Is the Welsing Institute, is the last session before the summer break, is it coming up next Thursday?
Right. It'll be next week on Thursday, 7 to 10 p.m., Blackburn Center at Howard University. That'll be our last session until September.
Okay. So that's Thursday, June 12th at 7 p.m. Eastern.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Right on. Folks in the D.C. area, Maryland, Virginia, you have a little free time next Thursday evening on the 12th. Go see Dr. Welsing. Should be constructive. Maybe you can even get some reading material so you can stop up and do some reading and research for the summer months. Person who dialed in, last four digits, 7537. Do you have a question for Dr. Welsing?
Yes, I do. Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Last night I posed a question as to whether black parents, black attempted parents, should be proactive. And I just wanted to get your opinion on that. And should the first person to talk about racism, should it be the black parents or should it be the children that have to ask questions? Dr. Welsing.
I think that the first persons to talk about racism should be parents in the context of the black community talking about racism. Do you see? In other words, it would be like if a community was in the vicinity of a river, and the parents would have to give children instructions about how to relate to the river that's in their environment so they do not drown. That is a part of the environment that they need to understand. And racism, we are in the total context of a power dynamic of racism, white supremacy. And it needs to be explained to children. So not teaching children to hate white people, but teaching children that we are in a power construct that tragically has many negative attitudes and behavior towards black people. And so this is what, as black people, we're going to do to change that unjust system to a system of justice, but making the priority instruction of that to our children. It's just the same as parents who classify themselves as white. They teach children that they are white and what white means, so that they will be able to participate in the maintenance of a system of racism, white supremacy. And black parents are not teaching black supremacy, but they are teaching. We are in, at this point in time, it has not always been the case, but it is the case at present, that we are in the presence of a power construct of racism, white supremacy. This is what it is, and this is how it works. And explaining that, because, see, I see children, I'm seeing at this particular time, a patient was in my office this past week who had been in a white school from a very early age, in a white private school. And the person was explaining how painful that was and how the patient and their siblings begged the parents to take them out of that school and put them in a black school because of the way they were treated. Do you see? Now, if the children don't understand, or and even parents need to understand, I've seen patients who were the first to integrate schools in the South. And one person had their head pushed in a commode with feces. And when they talk about it, many years later, they are still crying. See, the black parents didn't have any experience with what it means to be in a white school environment. And so they were interested in their children being recipients of the best education. But they didn't have any understanding. They thought, oh, little children would not be mistreated. But little children are mistreated. And when they're 18, 19 years old, or 20 years old, or 25 years old, and they come to the psychiatrist, and they start talking to the psychiatrist about how they were treated at very early ages, this is the reality, and black parents need to teach their children black is beautiful. Black pride, black dignity, black self-respect. I think that the reason that many people fall victim to being comfortable calling themselves niggers and dogs and bitches and hoes and gangsters and thugs, because nobody at this present time is teaching black children black is beautiful, black pride, black dignity, black self-respect. Because from the civil rights era forward, black people thought they're integrated, and so now they don't have to worry about racism. And that was a mistake because, tragically, people did not understand racism as a system that has a logical goal objective. And so the mistreatment has to be continuous. Now the mistreatment is in the form of closing schools, the imposition of charter schools that will soon be closed. So we could say that we're back in 1830 when black children were not being educated. They were not being given quality education. They weren't being given any education. And that's because of a system dynamic. See, everybody should be wondering, well, wait a minute, if the civil rights era took place 50 years ago, why are we still struggling with the same problem 50 years later? We thought that was solved. No, if you have a system, you go from change and back to where things started. So you probably have more black men in chains in prison than you had during formal slavery. But if people won't see it, if they are unable to look at things as a whole, and certainly unable to see it if they have been taught to think of themselves as niggers and dogs and gangsters and thugs and bitches and hoes, that kind of language in the brain computer means do not respect yourself. Do not engage in behavior that is self-respecting. Do not engage in behavior that is self-reflective. Because you are a nigger. And see, tragically, we've come to a point where people think that doesn't mean anything. But I have determined that the people who within our group who find themselves endorsing that kind of language are surprisingly the wealthiest people. The wealthiest black people are entertainers and people who play ball games. And that language is rampant within those two groups. And I say it's because, you know, it's one thing if your income is $30,000 a year, $15,000 a year. That's one thing. If your income is in the millions and you find yourself still being treated as less than, then you will be comfortable calling yourself a nigger because that's what nigger means, less than. See, if you thought, well, when I make $1 million, surely I will be accepted. Ask Oprah Winfrey when she tried to go into an exclusive women's clothing shop and have the door locked in her face, or being told that they wouldn't show her a particular item because it cost too much for a black person. So I say subconsciously, this is why this terminology finds itself acceptable. You mean I am a multimillionaire and I'm still being treated as a nigger. Which is what Donald Sterling said about Magic Johnson, essentially. Multi-millionaire, billionaire. If not billionaire, certainly multi-millionaire. So, no, the role for black people in a system of white supremacy is at the bottom of the barrel. And we should understand that and decide that's not where the mothers and fathers of everybody on the planet are supposed to be. But that's where we are supposed to be, in a system of racism, white supremacy, because black is a threat to white genetic survival. So to me, this is the importance of understanding why are black people treated in this way? Why are black people experiencing the things that they are experiencing? See, and then you can say, oh, well, finally I understand. So I now know what I'm going to do with my behavior. And my behavior is going to reflect who I really am on this planet. I'm the parent people. The mothers and fathers of everybody on the planet are black people. See, the first Americans, people are saying there were black people in America 30,000 years ago. They just found skeleton in the Yucatan that said the person looked like they were, their DNA is the same as Africa plus Asian. A 12,000-year-old skeleton found in the Yucatan. So explain, black people, explain racism, white supremacy to your children. Neely Fuller says what? If you do not understand white supremacy, racism, what it is and exactly how it works, everything else that you think you understand will only confuse you. And truer words were never spoken. If you do not understand racism, white supremacy, what it is and exactly how it works, everything else that you think you understand will only confuse you. And this is something the black people ought to make it their collective goal. In the next decade, black people, all black people in this area of the world, and hopefully all black people over the in Africa and in South America and the Caribbean, are going to understand racism, white supremacy. Why? It's essential for our mental health. And it is essential for us to understand what we're dealing with so that we can maximize whatever progress we intend to make. But if we don't understand the power dynamic that is surrounding us, we'll just be walking around and complaining and hating ourselves and calling ourselves names for the next millennia if we're here. Because the logical, if a group of people are fearful of genetic annihilation, their behavior will tend towards genocide of those people that they are afraid of. And if you understand definitions of genocide and then think about what is happening, any time the males of a group of people are trying to be transformed or forces trying to transform them into females, that's genocide. And so maybe that's the purpose of scandal, so every black female can think eventually she will be the concubine of a white man, so what happens to black men, they don't need to worry about.
Hopefully that took care of your question. Call her at 7537. We'll...
Yes, thank you, Dr. Murphy. Sorry.
Let's see. Next person that dialed in, call her at 5065. 5065. If you had a question for Dr. Welsing, your line should be open.
Yes. Greetings, Dr. Welsing. I have a comment and a question. I just want to thank you for bringing out that correlation between this man that shot up the Elliot Roger. I just want to thank you for bringing out the correlation of racism toward that incident. Mm. Because, you know, on the talk show, you know, when I get in my car and listen to the talk shows on the radio, they're talking about it's correlating to he felt he was ugly, just like those actors that be portraying in these comedies, and they always get the girl, like the white actor Seth Rogen and all these other people that's ugly or crazy looking, they get the girl, Elizabeth, the white girl, Elizabeth Banks. And also...
See, they've turned it all around and upside down, so you don't really understand what's going on. Yes.
Yeah. Thank you for bringing that out. My question is, okay, now you say that the Welsing Institute is only... The last day is going to be June 12th. My dad going to be teaching at Howard in the second semester, and I may go up there. Do you think you have anything maybe that you're going to do anything or any other event after that, before September. And just in case I go visit him, I, you know, and spend a week up there, I may, you know, maybe in July.
I see. Now, no, I don't really have anything scheduled.
Nothing scheduled. Okay.
Mm-hmm. So, okay. July and August will, you know, will be rest time.
Okay. I understand that. Okay.
Okay.
Unfortunately,
okay.
No. Okay.
Okay, but maybe hopefully you'll have time to visit us at some point.
Yeah, hopefully so.
Appreciate it, Puff. Hopefully some of the other folks, they can get out there either for the June 12th session or later in the year when it starts back up in September. This is S. Dot. S. Dot, did you have a question for Dr. Welsing?
Good evening. Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
I had two questions. Is it okay that I ask two? Because one was about family, but the other one was about racism directly. Is it okay?
Okay. One at a time, please. Okay.
Okay. The first question is just trying to study racism and looking at definitions, and you being a behavioral scientist, do you see any correlation between racism or racist and narcissism? Because when I look at the definition, the clinical definition that's provided for what's a narcissist, I see many of those characteristic traits and behavioral traits very consistent with people who I would define or classify as racist. So I wanted to know your opinion on racism and narcissism. Is there a correlation?
Okay, what comes to my mind is a Chinese proverb that says the beginning of wisdom is to call things by their correct name. And I would say narcissism is narcissism. Racism, white supremacy, as I've stated earlier, my definition is that that is a system of behavior, consciously and or subconsciously determined by people who classify themselves as white, as expressed in patterns of perception, logic, symbol formation, thought, speech, action, and emotional response, practiced in all areas of people activity, economics, education, entertainment, labor, law, politics, religion, sex, and war. For the ultimate purpose, this is the most important thing, for the ultimate purpose of white genetic survival and the preventing of white genetic annihilation on planet Earth, a planet upon which the vast and overwhelming majority of people are black, brown, red, and yellow, classified as non-white by white-skinned people. And they are genetically dominant compared to the genetic recessive white-skinned people who are a tiny minority. You see, so you might say, well, you know, that's like somebody might say, well, two things are similar. But I would caution that you talk about racism as white supremacy and think about my definition of what racism as white supremacy is. And that is not narcissism, although you might say there may be similarities. But narcissism does not have the goal objective of white genetic survival and the preventing of white genetic annihilation on planet Earth.
Thank you. I really appreciate that. And my second question is of a personal nature. Being that you are from the D.C. area, I'm sure you may be familiar with the case of Miriam Carey, who was shot and killed in D.C. Back in October with her one-year-old infant in the car. That is my wife's sister, my sister-in-law.
I'm so sorry.
Thank you. And it is now 8 months later. As a family, we still have not got any official notification from government officials about their so-called ongoing investigation. It seems to be that they're stonewalling us in terms of information. And just as a family, it's a very difficult time. My mother-in-law having to have buried her daughter, second youngest daughter, is going through a difficult time. She had an operation this past Friday. And just in general, as a family, being subjected to that level of public scrutiny, and, I mean, the overwhelming amount of scrutiny has been, it's just been overwhelming. I would just ask if you have any suggestions, any resources, or even any individuals who you know in the New York area who we might be able to reach out to in terms of dealing with the ongoing, continuing grief of this situation, because it is overwhelming for us as a family. And also, if you had any opinion of the events that occurred, if you could share those as well. Thank you.
Well, I would just say that a number of people that I have spoken to are very concerned about the circumstances. And I'm surprised, but at the same time not surprised, that the family has had some difficulty getting details from what happened. But you have to keep pressing for that. And in the meantime, I would encourage, because it's, you know, the loss and the death is compounded by the tragic circumstances surrounding it, but I would encourage the members of the family to get some grief counseling, because that's always important in handling the grief, working it through, and talking about it with people who are going through somewhat similar. I mean, the circumstances may be different, but the loss. And then, you know, beyond the grief counseling, getting more specific counseling as a family or as individuals within the family. And don't be afraid to, I would say it's like being 21st and 22nd century, to get the counseling, the supportive counseling that can help in a disastrous situation like your family has encountered. So I don't have anybody specifically to suggest to you, but you might look my name up and give me a call. And if there's some name that comes to me to share with you, I would be glad to do that.
Thank you. I appreciate you.
Okay. And God bless you and your family.
Thank you.
Always good to hear from S-Dot. The person who dialed in, I think this is our caller in Alabama. Caller in Alabama, if you had a question for Dr. Welsing, your line should be open.
Yes. Could I be heard very clearly?
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Okay. My first question would be, it's kind of confusing about how I would label Donald Sterling, because the way I would label him would be a racist white supremacist. But under the code, it would be kind of hard because, like, first of all, he's a European convert to Judaism. Right? He's a European Jew or whatever like that. But in my mind, as far as I know, they have no Northeast African heritage at all, as far as my knowledge. They're just Caucasians who converted. But if they are, if they do have any African bloodline, Northeast African bloodline, that would make Donald Sterling the victim of racism. Under Cole, and I kind of had a question about that. Like, somebody who is a European Jew, and they, you know, blatantly, you know, say racist things, would they be considered a white supremacist, or would they be considered a victim of racism, a self-hating victim of racism, though?
LeVar, can you repeat that last part of the question for me, please?
I think he said, according to the code, when you have someone like Donald Sterling, who he's saying would be of European descent, who might have converted to being a so-called Jew, would this person be considered a racist white supremacist, or depending on their lineage, their heritage, would he be considered a victim of racism, white supremacy, if I heard him correctly?
See, I would start with how Mr. Sterling classifies himself. And I believe he classifies himself as white. And so if that is the classification that he gives himself, and so that is the distinction that he's making about himself in contrast to black people and people of color. Do you see? In other words, Semites of the Jewish religion, as far as Hitler was concerned, he said they were not white. But if they classify themselves as white in this part of the world and their behavior is reflecting a racism, white supremacy mindset, then I would, you know, I would relate to them according to how they classify themselves along the line of race. If they say they're white, if he says he's white, fine, I'm going to accept that.
Okay, just help you out.
Sir.
Okay, I'm glad that's, constructive information that probably can help me understand a little bit better. Second thing I wanted to say was about how Tim Wise tried to call your work pseudoscientific BS. And I was speaking to Gus about this one time. Tim Wise might be all by himself on it, because it seems like the rest of the white community, like, they might not say it, but I was watching a movie called Casualties of War, and it seemed like these people took this scene right out of your work. Like, did you write this? I never read your books. I must admit, I'm not an avid reader. I should have read more. But I have watched many of your lectures and stuff like that. And but there's a movie called Casualties of War with Michael J. Fox. And about the part where you said about the penis being the gun, you know, and I was like, man, when I seen this part, I was like, man, whoever wrote this movie must have read your work. You see what I'm saying? Because the guy, it was a white male, when he raped the non-white female, he pointed to his gun. He had an M16. He said, oh, y'all think this is the gun? This is not the gun. I think he called it something else. But he said, this is just, you know, he made it small. He trivialized it. He said, oh, this is just nothing else. And he pointed to his penis. And he said, this is the real gun. You know what I'm saying? And that's when he's dragged to, he said some more stuff, but that's when he's dragged her back there, and he proceeded to rape the non-white female. And, yeah, have you ever watched that movie, Casualties of War, with Michael J. Fox?
No,
you,
I have not.
Yeah, if you ever watch it, because you said you ended up seeing it, didn't you?
I hadn't seen it until you mentioned it.
Oh, okay. But what did that remind you of her work or not, man? Because I'm like, man, that blew my mind. It was like, man, these people, they must have got this right out of Dr. Wilson's about their work, because to basically like what she was saying. You know what I'm saying? About the male penis being perceived as a, you know, a weapon or whatever like that. But I stopped talking so much and I mute my line and just thanks for having me comment.
Good to hear from you. Caller in Alabama. Casualties of War was the movie he was talking about. I have seen the scene he's talking about. It is exactly okay. As he said. It's right. Exactly what you're saying about the gun being a representation of the penis.
Mm-hmm.
The person that dialed in from a blocked number. Did you have a question for Dr. Welsing?
Hello, Dr. Welsing. This is Karma Pickings. Thank you so much for making time for us this afternoon. Now, I've been trying to understand racism, white supremacy, but more so than that, I've been trying to understand white people. And this will sound a little bit off in left field, but given what you've said about all of their people relationships being couched in a framework of racism and white supremacy so as to promote their genetic survival, surely there are other relationships, and those other relationships that they have, and those relationships probably are also geared towards promoting their genetic survival. I have noticed that when I pass by the charity hospital in the black neighborhood, the hospital looks run down. And when I pass by the pet hospital for dogs in the white neighborhood, that hospital has chandeliers and it's beautiful. And the relationship historically that white people have had with dogs, especially from royalty to the poorest beggar on the street with his thumb out trying to hitch a ride across the country, has been remarkable, because other cultures, other people, non-white people, simply do not have that close of a relationship with dogs. I was wondering, do you think that there is something in that relationship that promotes white genetic survival, and what is it that they might lack that non-white people have no lack of, that would make them seek out that relationship? Does that make any sense?
Laval, would you please repeat that for me?
She said that her observation, the black hospitals in her area are very run down and just very shabby, not well kept. The hospitals for the dogs and pets, they're sparkling, they're brand new, looks like they have lots of resources. She said that it's been her observation that white people, they spend, even poor white people who don't have many resources, that they'll have a dog. She said, is it something about white genetic annihilation and their efforts to survive? Is there something, a relationship between that and their connection to dogs, or is it something that you think they're lacking specifically that's provoking, motivating them to seek out and maintain these close ties to dogs?
Well, if you read about the origin of Western civilization, which they themselves pinpoint as starting in Rome, and the founders of Rome, now, you might say these are symbolic founders, are Romulus and Remus. And those two small children are suckling on a wolf. And a wolf is a canine, and the dog is a canine. And the fact that they are human children being suckled by a wolf would indicate that they were abandoned by their parents. And so the people who classify themselves as white, their relationship with people of color on the planet, if their relationships did not have a point of blockage, then white would be genetically annihilated. and the way that people who classify themselves as white end up relating to the people of color is not a manner to really engender deep friendship, but they can establish friendship with the dog. And so that same culture says that man's best friend, white man's best friend, is a dog. And in the city such as Washington, D.C., Chicago, Philadelphia that are being gentrified, black people are being pushed out of urban centers by white people. And you see the white people walking around with their dogs, and they have parks for their dogs. And just like the caller talked about, the facilities for animals and dogs is superior in appearance to the facilities where black people, for example, are treated. And so I say that people who classify themselves as white seem to not feel comfortable around people of color. I mean, you know, you have all kinds of exceptions to the rule, or what appear like exceptions to the rule, but you still have the dynamic of racism, white supremacy, that the majority of white people have not brought to an end. And so their relationship is not one of continuous pattern of friendship with people they classify as non-white. But the dog, even if white people feel that on the continent of Africa, as albino mutants, they were rejected by the black people, and that the dog liked them, and that the dog nurtured them, and so now they find it more comforting to be in a close relationship with the dog than with people. But I would say most fundamentally, if they related intimately with the people of color on the planet, white would disappear. And I would say that's the fundamental explanation as far as I can see it at this point.
Thank you.
Appreciate that, Karma. The person who dialed in, let's see, the caller, last four digits. Oh, this is Mr. Demery. Mr. Demery 4, if you had a question for Dr. Welsing, your line should be open.
Yes, can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Greetings, Dr. Francis Cress Welsing.
Greetings to you.
Mm-hmm. And greetings, guys. Dr. Cress Welsing, I would have one question, and first, I'd like to thank you for stopping by and gracing us with some of your knowledge. And we consider you an icon in the community and just a jewel. And I'll try to be concise. If we've learned anything from your visits, we know that the self-respect is more powerful than a nuclear weapon. So my question is along that lines, as collectively as black people, we have a tendency to suffer from self-hate. So self-respect is something that we should strive after. But self-love and self-respect seems to be elusive and somewhat of an illusion in the way that those who suffer the most from it are less likely to be aware of it. So I was wondering if you could share something with us to help us to realize when we suffer in that area and what we can do to rectify that. Thank you. I'll mute my line for the answer.
Let me say this. Trying to figure out where to start. If you think about the civil rights movement, when the black people in the South determined that they were going to desegregate the restaurants, the buses, etc., and the people went up against police clubs and beatings and fire hoses and dogs, and in all of their dignity, they marched, and they suffered, but they changed the landscape in America. And out of that movement, the people talked about black pride. Black is beautiful. Black self-respect and black power. And I think the system understood if we let the people continue in this vein, we don't know what they might cause to change. So they knew it would be important to destroy that sense of dignity, that sense of pride, that sense of black power, that sense that black is beautiful. And what they did was begin to pull black people into, you want to be movie stars, well, then we are going to have you in movies such as Superfly, and you're going to be using and selling drugs and cursing one another and shooting and killing one another. And so that has been continuous with the system doing a certain form of psychological warfare, destroying. And because people were being given money as movie stars and being given money as rap artists and entertainers, the people didn't understand, because they didn't really understand the system of racism, white supremacy. And so they were pulled into, enticed into accepting these roles and thinking that it was entertainment instead of understanding that it was psychological warfare to destroy black dignity, to destroy the image that black is beautiful and black pride and black power. And so I see that as having happened. And so people didn't understand. I mean, in other words, they saw, well, the people who are using this language are making millions of dollars. So that must be all right. So this language doesn't mean anything. And so I can call myself a bitch or a hoe or a gangster or a thug. It doesn't mean anything. It's entertainment. But I would just say that was high-level psychological warfare and the destruction of something that had evolved as being very powerful. And so I say that black people have to go back and now understand within an understanding that we are in a total system structure of racism, white supremacy, and that what needs to be restored, and it's critical that it be restored, is black self-respect. And by countering racism, white supremacy, and Neely Fuller's work, he talks about counter-racism, and he talks about 10 behaviors that black people should practice that begin to counter racism, and I call them exercises in black mental health and black self-respect. And those exercises are: stop name-calling one another, stop gossiping about one another, stop cursing one another, stop squabbling with one another, stop snitching on one another for reasons of personal gain, stop being discourteous and disrespectful to one another, stop stealing from one another, stop robbing one another, stop fighting one another, and stop killing one another. Now, these behaviors seem to be very simple, but they are profoundly important and powerful in reestablishing that as black people, we respect ourselves. See, the system of racism, and if when people say, well, the system, how is it teaching? If you turn on the television in the morning, you're going to see white, 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 and then you might see a black man and a black woman rolling their eyes at each other in a commercial. But you are being taught white supremacy by the media 24 hours a day, and that has its impact. And so black people have to be consciously aware that we are in a system structure of racism, white supremacy, and that black self-respect has in many ways been annihilated, and that we have to regain that. And I add to that list, stop using and selling drugs to one another. Stop black children from thinking that as children they can be adequate mothers and fathers. Black people don't need to procreate until they are in their 30s, after they have finished school, and after they are married. Stop throwing down trash where black people live, work, and play. Stop believing in welfare, believe in prosperity. Stop pretending that racism, white supremacy does not exist, and stop allowing black, brown, red, and yellow people being divided by racism, white supremacy. So these are, again, understanding first and foremost that we are in a total system structure of racism, white supremacy, and that system has its goal objective, white genetic survival and preventing white genetic annihilation. And that is what we are dealing with, and we have to master an understanding of that and also master an understanding of the behaviors, individual and collective behaviors, that are going to allow us to regain our respect for ourselves so that we can continue in the direction of pushing to replace the system of racism, white supremacy, with a system of justice. Justice meaning no one is mistreated, no one is allowed to be mistreated, and those who need the most help get the most help. And so we have to transform ourselves and reorient ourselves within a framework of a different level of understanding of what it is that we are dealing with. Because the people who classify themselves as white consciously and or subconsciously have designed a system for their genetic survival on this planet. And the chance that they are going to change that system themselves, I don't think that chance is very great. And so we have to do the transforming. And if we transform ourselves, in other words, the people of color on this planet are the vast and overwhelming majority of people. And if we transform ourselves, and I say most specifically, the creator of the universe, however one wants to call that or name that, made black people the mothers and fathers of everybody on the planet, including white people. And so we have a very critical and important role to play, even though we have been brought down to the very lowest level, to the lowest depths. And it is up to us to realize that we are the parent people, and we have to rise to what the creative force in the universe intended for black people to be, being the parents of all of the people on the planet. And so, to me, it's a magnificent challenge. It's very difficult. This is a war. But the war is to transform a system of injustice into a system of justice so there can be peace. And so, what else can be more motivating, stimulating, or exciting than that, for us to become all that the creative force in the universe intended us to be?
That got your question, Mr. Demery?
Yes, it did. Thank you very much, Dr. Francis Presswells.
The person at 1184, caller at 1184, did you have a question for Dr. Welsing?
Oh, yeah, yes, sir. Thanks a lot.
Could you speak up? You're a little low.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you. Thank you for the call. Good to meet you, Dr. Welsing. Can I be heard?
Yes.
Nice to meet you. Good to meet you.
Oh, my pleasure. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, thanks a lot. I had a question. Is there any other work that you're working on? Any other writing you might be working on putting out?
I'm trying to work on ISIS paper volume 2. There have been some interruptions, but I'm still working in that direction.
Oh, well, thank you. That's beautiful. Another question I had is, is there an audio version of the ISIS paper book?
No, there's not. So everybody has to get a copy and read it. Huh?
It'd be nice if you made a version with you speaking, actually.
Okay, well, I will definitely give that some thought.
Okay, and the self-respect part. Those things that we should all be committed to not doing, what kind of procedures can people go institute in their life to inculcate that?
You just have to, in other words, let me just say this. Everybody should get a copy of Neely Fuller's work, Textbook for Victims of Racism. But, you know, those behaviors are they seem very simple, but they are really profound. If you just imagine being in a group of black people, could be a family, could be a group of friends, and nobody, see, you can't impose the behaviors on somebody else, but you can practice them yourself. And so stop name calling. If you didn't name call anybody, that can transform, people around you may be name calling, but people will begin to notice, well, he never calls any names. He calls people by the name they wish to be called. See, if you are around black people, if you're around, black men, and they're doing a whole lot of what they call joning on each other, constant, continuous demeanment, and they, laugh, and it's supposed to be fun, but it really is that the system of racism, white supremacy, because it is fearful of the genetic power of black men, has treated black men in all too many instances demeaning and degrading. And so that has been internalized and then projected onto one another. And so people just say, isn't that fascinating? Didn't understand how that worked before. But not going to name call. See, one person who doesn't name call, that's one person who doesn't gossip. They can hear all kinds of stuff, but they never pass it on. You see, not cursing one another. So it's a behavior that the individual adopts because they are consciously aware and engaging in black mental health, black self-respect, and countering. This is their work. And they might as well see themselves in battle fatigues because they're in the army of justice, if you want to call it that. You know, the people who are practicing counter-racism are doing it for the establishment of justice and peace on the planet. And so being, not being discourteous, not being disrespectful to one another. I heard a woman speak in a group of black people, and she was talking about a relationship that she had with a black man, and saying that they had a compact, they made a compact when they met, and they met walking around the track, you know, exercise track. And she said they must have walked for 100 miles just walking and talking before there was ever any intimacy between them. And then when they decided to become a couple, she said they made a pact that they were never going to say angry, hostile, demeaning things to one another. They were never going to call each other out of their name. And so she was describing this about what a wonderful relationship they had. Tragically, the male person died after they'd known each other about 12 or 15 years. But she was describing what a wonderful relationship it was, but they had made a contract that they would never call each other out of their names, and it wasn't going to be a lot of arguing and squabbling between them. And so she was saying that was what made it such a magnificent relationship. And see, I think that we don't realize how much the system structure and dynamic of racism, white supremacy, begins to influence or is right in the middle of the relationship that black males and black females attempt to establish with one another. I mean, people think they're doing their own thing, but the system is designed for white genetic survival, which means it's war against both of them, and the black male person in particular. And that dynamic begins to have the dominant influence, no matter how the people start out. That has the dominant influence because people, for the most part, don't know what's hitting them. And that's why black people greet each other saying, hey, what's happening? Because we don't know what's going on. We don't know why, when we are trying to move in one direction, we're being forced in another direction. And that's the system of racism and white supremacy that cannot thrive if there is maximal development of the black genetic and constitutional potential. So the system is pushing black people in a negative direction. And as long as they don't understand it, then their frustration and stresses, they end up taking out on each other. But think about the behaviors. They're simple, not gossiping, not cursing, not using and selling drugs, not throwing down trash where black people live, work, and play, encouraging children to understand that producing a new life, a new black person, is not play. That black babies, you know, children have to be taken care of 25 years so that they can stand strongly on their feet as males and females. But if we play with producing children, then they're going to be destroyed and crushed by the system. So there are many things that we can begin to understand, but if you just put the pressure and the determination on self, I'm just going to this year practice not gossiping or name-calling, we're not stealing or not robbing from one another, or fighting and killing. Just imagine if enough black people, we had a critical mass of black people who were thinking, not stop fighting and stop killing one another. If that became the code for black self-respect, and people were serious about practicing it and serious about this is going to be our activity within the framework of fighting counter-racism and fighting for justice on this planet, black people could transform things in America. You see, by understanding the power of black self-respect. And as I said earlier, that's why that black pride, black power, black is beautiful, black self-respect was annihilated. The system understood that has to be annihilated. These people could take over the world with that level of courage. See, I say courage is a cousin of self-respect. That without self-respect, there can't be courage. And courage is needed to transform this system. And again, it's not about spending any time hating white people. That's cheap. You see, but the emphasis is on individual self-transformation, collective transformation, but with individual black people deciding, I'm not going to complain, I'm going to counter racism, white supremacy by transforming my behavior in relationship to myself. I'm going to love, value, and respect myself and reflect what I feel towards myself towards other black people. Now, that's gigantic power. That's why I say self-respect is more powerful than a nuclear weapon.
Wow, got it again. Super important. Thank you, caller at 1184. The caller at 1590. Did you have a question for Dr. Francis Cress-Welsing?
Greetings. Dr. Welsing, it's a pleasure to be speaking with you tonight.
My pleasure.
I appreciate the 40-plus years you put into combating racism. My question is, we talk a lot about white supremacy, and the attention we give it is warranted because it is the most powerful system on the planet. But let's just say that white supremacy was obliterated, it no longer existed. Do you think we'll have to battle Asian supremacy? Because it seems like they'll be the next power up.
Well, do you see, again, I would say that black self-respect. See, in other words, when I think this is, you know, President Obama has been trying to initiate respect towards, you know, in other words, I'm not saying he does it perfectly, but it's like he has that, you know, respect towards other people, trying to kind of somehow put that into the discussion. That, see, again, we don't really understand as black people who we are on this planet and in this universe. See, the creative force that made this universe created black people as black. And even within the framework of the system of racism, white supremacy, what do the white people say is the most powerful thing in the universe? A black hole. And now they're trying to understand the mystery of dark matter. Black. See, I don't think we understand who we are, and we will not understand. You know, maybe eons ago we knew who we were, and we understood who we are, who we were then. But we're the parent people on the planet, as made the parent people by the forces in this universe, the people who put up the pyramids. And so if we begin to understand who we are not, we're thinking we're better than anybody else. It's just a matter of understanding who we are and what is supposed to be our purpose on this planet and in the universe. As Neely Fuller talks about, moving towards becoming universal man and universal woman through the establishment of justice and peace. And so the dynamic of racism, white supremacy, the dynamic of injustice, some people might call it evil, that dynamic has overwhelmed the planet, overwhelmed us, demeaned us, and degraded us, and taken us to where we are now. The least respect, we're the only people on the planet who entertain ourselves by calling ourselves niggers and dogs and bow wows and bitches and hoes. See, this is significant. So we have been taken down to the lowest depths. The parent people have been taken down to the lowest depths. And so if we as black people are on mission to retrieve ourselves and to be what we are supposed to be and start admiring, I say most black is most beautiful. See, right now, you know, we've been, you know, the more we can have ancestors who were raped by the white man, then the happier we are. And we have to decide all the colors are okay. But most black, crystal black, is most beautiful. If we begin to understand who we are and conduct ourselves as individuals, you don't have to join any organization, don't have to pay any dues. It's just a matter of what you're doing with your brain computer and you're thinking about black self-respect and black dignity and black pride and black is beautiful. And black is going to transform a system of racism, white supremacy, into a system of justice so there can be peace on the planet and go forward and become universal man and universal woman. That's our mission, and that's who we are going to become. If we find that space, because, see, all of the people come from black people. You start with crystal black, and you produce a mutation to albinism, and you mix the two together, and you have every color on the planet. Everybody comes from black. White can only make white. Black is the only color that can make all of the people on the planet. That's who we are. And so if we see self-respect as something that is attractive in and of itself. Because if you respect yourself, you can respect other people. And so if black people get into the space of self-respect, then they can relate to other people with respect. Everybody likes to be respected. So I would say don't worry about the Chinese-speaking non-white people. Worry about can we transform ourselves into the beings, the human beings that we are supposed to be, that the force of the universe intended us to be when we were made the parent people. Nobody has more than we do. Everybody comes out of us. Nobody has more than we have. When I say that, I see Michael Jordan flying in the air. But that's something for us to reflect on and to become serious about. See, stopping the finger popping and the booty shaking and all the other simple-minded behaviors that white supremacy wants to see us in so that they can look at us and say, look at them. Look at them and all of their inadequacies. They could say, look at what we've made them into being. But it's our, you know, it's our responsibility to understand that and to be on mission to transform ourselves.
Hope that took care of your question, caller.
Yes, sir. I appreciate that.
Right on. The person at 1502, want to get your question. Just they had reported as well. I think this guy reported yesterday. Justin Bieber, guess he's a white entertainer, singer. Do you know who Justin Bieber is, or have you heard the
name? Right, okay. I know. Mm-hmm.
He had to apologize for making a racist joke about black people. He said, why are black people afraid of chainsaws? And then he gave the answer, run nigger, 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 nigger. And he came out to apologize and said that he knows he has lots of black fans and fans of all cultures, and he didn't understand the power of certain words and how they can hurt. And he thought it was okay to repeat hurtful words and jokes, but didn't realize at the time that it wasn't funny and the fact that his actions were continuing the ignorance. Yeah.
See, now, black people, I advocate us as black people. When Justin Bieber and anybody else comes forth with their statements that reflect racism, white supremacy, think that instead of, us falling on the floor and screaming and crying, that black people would say, no, we understand that language because we are in a total system structure of racism, white supremacy. And that's where this kind of language comes from. And so now that we are really understanding the total system structure, dynamic culture of racism, white supremacy, this kind of statement can be expected. And as long as the system exists, we expect to hear more of it. And this is why we see as our responsibility as black people to change the system of racism, white supremacy, and replace it with a system of justice. See, not a system of democracy or a system of capitalism. That's fantasy. No, we have a system of racism, white supremacy that covers economics, education, entertainment, labor law, politics, religion, sex, and war. The system for the ultimate purpose of white genetic survival and to prevent white genetic annihilation on planet Earth. So we expect this language to come from this system. If there was a system of democracy, we wouldn't have this kind of language. But we have a system of racism, white supremacy. This is why we can expect this kind of language being used over and over and over again. See, and so if we correctly label it as opposed to, and then the person says, oh, you're playing the race card. No, we are simply expressing the fact that we are aware we are in a system of racism, white supremacy. And this is the kind of speech and action that is consistent with a system of racism, white supremacy. So the next time somebody calls President Obama a nigger, this is the kind of language we expect to hear in a system of racism, white supremacy. See, if black people, if that's our response, then we are saying we acknowledge we are no longer in the denial of racism. We acknowledge that we are in the presence of a total system structure, local, national, global, of racism, white supremacy. And this kind of speech and this kind of behavior is consistent with that system. That's why we, our first and foremost assignment is to oppose it. Do you see, oppose it by black self-respect, how we relate to one another. See, it'll be the most frightening thing on the planet, and people look up. Wait a minute, the black people are no longer killing each other. Wait a minute, what's happening? How are we going to be maintaining racism, white supremacy, if they're not into self-destruction? We need them to destroy themselves. We need them to be on drugs and shooting and killing each other. We need them to not respect education. We need them to not understand and respect family life. Wait a minute, what's happening? They're talking about black self-respect. Wow, we've got a problem. We can't deal with them if they respect themselves. We need them to be into self-destruction. We've got to make more movies. We've got to pay more money and get more psychological warfare so that they will be abusive towards themselves and one another and demeaning and degrading sex. We need that. If they don't degrade sex, then they will build strong families. We can't have that. Their children will be strong. If a mother and father are together, the sons will have fathers, and they will be strong. We can't have that. I hope you all understand.
Ashe, Dr. Francis Kress Welsing. The caller at 1502, last four digits, 1502. Did you have a question for Dr. Welsing?
Yes, I have one quick question. Greetings, Ms. Wilson.
Greetings.
My question is, let's say if blacks were, if we started to get on that track of respecting each other and stop name-calling each other, building businesses and having real black communities, will we come under, more harsher attack by the white supremacy system?
Well, do you see, the more you build black self-respect, the stronger you are to meet any challenge that comes towards you.
Exactly.
Are you with me?
Yes.
See, I said what? Courage is the cousin of self-respect. And with self-respect, anything can be accomplished. What is the goal? Anything can be accomplished with self-respect and courage.
Thank you for your question. Thank you for your answer.
The caller at 8043, did you have a question for Dr. Welsing?
I certainly do. Can I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Gus, for taking my question. And Dr. Welsing, greetings to you. I'm honored to be able to speak with you. And I'm piggybacking off of the previous caller's question. In light of the fact that white people are desperate to...
for their genetic survival.
Okay. In light of the fact that whites are desperate for genetic survival, and also considering the history of Black Wall Street and Rosewood, where, from my understanding, people did operate with dignity and began to grow, and pretty much was, they were obliterated. Do you feel that we would be able to attain a system of justice and coexist in the same land space as white people?
Well, I think that a system of justice that where there's self-respect and, you know, the idea is justice, then people who need to mistreat other people, if they insist upon that, maybe they'll just have to be put on a spaceship and sent to Mars.
Thank you for answering my question.
Let me say this. I often say to people, if you were fortunate enough to have a grandmother in your household, and if you were misbehaving, all they had to do is look across the room and raise an eyebrow.
Oh, yes, I remember.
And
that.
You knew that you had to, they didn't have to yell, they didn't have to scream, all they had to do is raise an eyebrow. Now, that eyebrow raising was because those grandmothers respected themselves. And because they respected themselves as children and as older people, we knew we had to respect them.
Yes, ma'am.
Enough
said.
Thank
you.
Okay.
And I think, unless I have made an error, I think this is the last person that had dialed in with a question. The person that called from a blocked number, did you have a question for Dr. Welsing? Person called in from a blocked number, did you have a question for Dr. Welsing? Your line should be open. I don't know if you hit your mute button by accident, or maybe you're just listening. Sure, last check, person called in with a blocked number. If you dialed in, you raised your hand to speak with Dr. Welsing. Your line should be open. Did you have a question? All right. I will assume they were maybe just listening, or maybe someone asked the question that they were also going to ask. Before we wrap things up, this is one I was definitely looking forward to getting feedback from you on. I know many times when you visited with us, and I've heard you give other presentations where you've emphasized that racism, white supremacy is terrorism against non-white people. And that we should say that. We should say that exactly and call it exactly what it is on a regular basis. The previous caller, she just mentioned Tulsa, Oklahoma, and what happened there. That is an act of terrorism against black people. And you can just go on down the line, Emmett Till or whatever other incidents that people want to bring up. These are acts of terrorism.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
When I speak with particularly black people, when I have them on the program, and I'll ask, well, are you afraid of white people? And the answer that I get consistently is an indignant, afraid of white people. Who do you think you're talking to? I'm not scared of any white person. There's no white person on this planet I'm afraid of. You can line up, 100 white people right now, and I'll tell them anything I need to. I'm not scared of no white person ever in my life. That's what I hear consistently. And I said, well, wow, if that's the case that, we're not afraid of white people, then maybe it's not terrorism. And I said, I'm going to ask Dr. Welsing about that. What do you think is going on where, so many black people insist that, hey, I am not scared of any white people?
I'm afraid of white people. I mean, in other words, white supremacy is the most deadly and treacherous form of behavior that has ever been conceived on this planet. Do you see? I mean, but it's like, any soldier that goes into battle, if they are honest, are they afraid? Yes. But they let their respect for themselves or their courage manage the fear. But are they afraid? You better believe I'm afraid of racism, white supremacy. And when I looked at the devastation that is done to our people 24/7, the devastation of poor schools, the devastation of poor housing, I saw something on television about Jackson, Mississippi, and the poor part of that town where black people live, and the people in New Orleans whose homes were never built. You better believe I'm afraid. But my self-respect and my sense of what it is that I'm supposed to be doing on this planet helps me wade through that fear. And see, as a black female, I don't have the same fear that has been built into a lot of males when they were stopped as children and terrorized by so-called police, or the black men who were stopped even when their expensive suits and their expensive cars and their high-level education stopped and made to feel that they might lose their lives. So you better believe I'm afraid of white people. And this horrific system of terrorism and injustice that they have created on this planet. But we have to try to find our self-respect and our courage to move through it and to master it. I used to tell people that there ought to be a conference, a national conference held, and black men, you know, announced that they're going to have a national conference and talk about their fear of the white man, their fear of white people. Now, you want to see America come to attention? It will be all kind of reporters. Well, what are you going to do? Well, we don't know. We're just meeting to discuss the fact of our fear, a fear that is generated by the way black people have been treated in the last 500 years on this planet, in this part of the world. Well, what are you going to do? We don't know. But we're just here to discuss our fear and to get over the fear of talking about the fear, because that takes courage. So at least that's my contribution to that discussion.
Mm. Fantastic. I'm reminded of last summer, I think, for one brief instant, some of that false bravado was not there. It was right after the trial for the murder of Trayvon Martin. And I think it was even one person dialed in and different reports that I saw where it was black fathers were talking about being parents. And we had some black mothers dial in as well. And they were saying that they started talking and it just got very emotional. Even there were some tears saying, man, as a black parent, I cannot protect my child. My child could be killed next 5 minutes.
I was just going to say that. Every black female that has a son can address their fear if he goes outside. He might not come back because of the indirect violence of the system of racism, white supremacy. The violence of depriving black males of employment, and through their frustration or through unemployment removing black fathers from the home, and all of the frustration, people joining gangs to try to get the sense of strength that if a father had been in the home, they could have gotten it from the father. No, we are a total people in fear. I don't care how much money you have. You are not safe from the system of racism, white supremacy, and no matter how much education you have. Because the system is just that deadly. Look at the slaughter that's going on the continent of Africa. And all the people being chopped up and butchered. That's indirectly from the system of racism, white supremacy. No, if you're afraid, that means you have a high IQ.
Mm.
You are decoding the environment for what it is.
Mm. Brilliant. That's in the word guide as well. Mr. Fuller has that in his compliment to the code book. It's intelligent fear when he talks about that black people, victims of racism, non-white people should have an intelligent fear of racist man, racist woman, given their long history of terrorism against non-white people, and that having intelligent fear, you strategize. You codify behavior so that you can work against that fear and do things that are needed to replace white supremacy with justice. That's right. Straight from the word, God, intelligent fear. Wow. It has been magnificent, as usual, hearing your views, Dr. Welsing. I'm so thankful you could share a bit of your Sunday evening with us. I have posted the book. I hope people will nab a copy. I got mine already. It is Einstein on Race and Racism by Fred Jerome and Roger Taylor. Great information. We might even see if we can do a book study session on it down the road, but get a copy of the book. I think Dr. Welsing, she has said repeatedly, reading is more important than watching television. I try to say that as frequently as I can and encourage folks, find some reading material that is of constructive value and get into it. And do that if you have children. Definitely model that for your offspring as well. Just thank you. We are super grateful that you could speak with us this evening, Dr. Welsing. Please continue your outstanding efforts, and we will definitely look forward to speaking with you again down the road.
Well, thank you for having me, and I commend people like yourselves who dare to have very important discussions. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dr. Welsing. Take excellent care and enjoy the rest of your Sunday evening.
Thank you. Bye now.
Good evening. Wow. Context of white supremacy. Dr. Francis Cress Welsing, 22nd time. I hope folks energized heard something that you can use as you move forward in your week. I know, unfortunately, a lot of folks are returning to the plantation tomorrow, Monday morning. Document. She even touched on that, too. Document. You're in the workplace. Understand system of white supremacy. Document. Be observant. Talk about that all the time. We will be back on Tuesday. Dr. Umar Abdullah Johnson, I think, if memory serves, this is his 9th visit. I could be incorrect about that, but he's been here a while, too. But he should be here on Tuesday. We'd be back to our normal broadcast time, which is 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Central, and 5 p.m. Pacific. Dr. Umar Abdullah Johnson will be joining us. Be grand to get some of his thoughts on some of the current events that have been taking place. Always a hoot to hear from him, get an update on how the efforts to construct the school are going as well. If folks would like, I'm cautious about telling people I will send out information because I got avalanched the last time I did that. And then it took about a month of people sending emails to send them PDFs to documents and things that they wanted. The manifesto for Elliot Roger, the suspected killer in Southern California. You can just download that. It's on the New York Times. It should be all over the place. I got it a week ago, so by now it should be everywhere. The version that I have is 141 pages, the PDF, so I would just say make sure that you get the full document and not tidbits here and there. I would highly encourage that you give it a read. He is pretty much talking about racism, white supremacy for the duration. You'll get to hear him talk about the black nanny that he had, the despicable thoughts that he had about other non-white people, self-hate, as Dr. Welsing described it, and the pain of not being accepted as a white person, and how he started to recognize that at age 9, since the caller did ask about the importance of talking to your offspring about racism. Definitely get that, and give a review of that material. I wholeheartedly agree with Dr. Welsing that that situation has not been reported accurately or adequately in the focus in what they're choosing to talk about and what they're choosing to omit. I spoke with Mr. Fuller about that as well this week. He said that he thought Elliot Rodger was white. I said, did you know he had a non-white parent? He said no, and that was almost enough right there for him to change his opinion, just because he said he didn't know that one of Elliot Rodger's parents was not white. Then when I read him that paragraph that we started with, where he said that he was mixed race, that was it. He changed his mind immediately and said, I think this person was not white, and that paragraph should be read consistently when people talk about this event so that they understand what is going on and that they are not confused. And then he went immediately to what he has said consistently about the incorrectness of sexual intercourse between white people and non-white people, that it only produces confusion, exactly why he labels them tragic arrangements. And he said, for the offspring, this is what you can expect. Confusion, confusion, confusion. Anywho, we will be back on Tuesday. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in. I hope it was a constructive investment of your Sunday evening. Remain safe on the workplace. We will do our prayer to wrap things up. Creator, we ask that you aid us in being patient with other victims of racism. Help us to be patient with ourselves. Allow us to remain focused, doing all that we can to nourish mental health, self-respect, courteous treatment of other black people, other victims of racism in all areas of people activity every single day. Help us recognize that we have been programmed, encouraged to mistreat, devalue, and be discourteous to other black people, other non-white people. Help us to understand that that only aids racist woman, racist man, racist child. Help us remain dedicated on our assignment to produce justice and to honestly acknowledge our fears of white people, not to be bogged down, petrified, and cowardly, but to recognize that we have a dastardly opponent and that we will need to be methodical, strategic, codified to successfully, permanently solve the problem, white people. It has been time. Replace white supremacy with justice as soon as possible. Context of white supremacy. Signing out. Thanks all for tuning in.
I'm a victim, brother.
No problem. You're a victim.
Hey, I'm a victim of 400 years of conditioning.
Shut up.
The man has programmed my conditioning.
Mm-hmm.
Even my conditioning has been conditioned.